The scripture this morning is John 1, 1 through 18. Before the world began, there was the Word. The Word was God, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. All things were made through him. Nothing was made without him. In him there was life. That life was light for the people of the world. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overpowered the light. There was a man named John who was sent by God. He came to tell people about the light. Through him, all people could hear about the light and believe. John was not the light, but he came to tell people about the light. The true light was coming into the world. The true light gives light to all. The Word was in the world. The world was made through him, but the world did not know him. He came to the world that was his own, but his own people did not accept him. But some people did accept him. They believed in him. To him he gave the right to become children of God. They did not become his children in the human way. They were not born because of the desire or wish of some man. They were born of God. The Word became a man and lived among us. He saw his glory, the glory that belongs to the only Son of the Father. The Word was full of grace and truth. John told about him. He said, "This is the one I was talking about. I said, the one who comes after me is greater than I am. He was living before me. The Word was full of grace and truth. From him we all received more and more blessings. The law was given through Moses, but grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No man has ever seen God, but God the only Son has ever seen God. But God the only Son is very close to the Father, and the Son has shown us what God is like."
Do you have a favorite story, favorite novel, favorite book? One that you have treasured, one that you may have read several times, one that you think is just the greatest book? If someone tries to ask you about what you would recommend, this is the book that always would come to the front. What happens if someone tells you they're going to turn that novel into a movie? Do you get excited about it? You think, finally, there's going to be some attention to this book, and I'm looking forward to this movie coming out. Or maybe at that point you get a little worried about it. Think, well, will they do justice to this story? Or will I cringe when I go into that movie theater? I've had some experiences like this over the years. One of the more memorable ones was, it's getting older and older now, when Peter Jackson decided to turn The Lord of the Rings into movies. There were those in the beginning who wondered, well, could this even be possible? And would anybody go to see these movies? And then there are all these debates about, well, did he add things to the movies? Or did he leave crucial things out of the movies? I attended a public lecture a few weeks ago from a noted science fiction author. And one of the things he did was he started harping on how Peter Jackson had left the crucial scenes at the end of The Lord of the Rings out of the film. Or perhaps you love C.S. Lewis's The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. You can evaluate all sorts of things about how they turned that one into a film a few years ago, and the beautiful scenes of Lucy coming into the snow and meeting Mr. Tumnus and getting pulled into this fantasy world. But then the disturbing kinds of choices that they might make at the end when Aslan bites down on the wicked queen and then says, "It is finished." That was not in the book, and there are implications that come from adding that to the story. All of this is to say there is a distinct difference between books and movies. And Stephanie will tell us, Jane Eyre can't be encapsulated into a 90-minute film. And even if you have a 6-hour miniseries, you really don't get everything that's in the book Jane Eyre. But we all have these kinds of experiences. You may be maybe like my friend who says, "Well, I'm not really into books, and I'll just wait until the movie comes out. All the important books get made into movies anyway." But if you are a fan of books, you realize there is this distinct difference between printed words on a page and the experience of reading them and imagining a story and actually going to a theater, whether it's a movie theater or a stage where you see actors performing it live in front of you. There's a difference between a performance and the words on the page, the message. We Christians sometimes wrestle with these kinds of things when we talk about, well, what is the Christian life about? Is it about the message that we tell? The important preaching, the studying of the Bible, the preaching of the Bible, the telling of these stories? Or is it allowing those stories to shape our lives and living them out? Moral action, living in the world, serving in the world. When we start thinking about these things, we should always think about this crucial passage in the Gospel of John. John chapter 1. It's a famous passage. It's one that we read on a regular basis. It's one we think about on a regular basis. And yet, there's still something that eludes us in this passage. We think about the Word was made flesh and made his home among us. The profound statement, so simple, and yet do we really understand it? We're not talking explicitly about the printed word on the page here, but we're talking about the nature of God. We're moving into Trinitarian mysteries in this passage. When we talk about the Word being with God in the beginning, and all that God was, the Word was, and then all that was created was made through the Word. And so if we read through that in our English translation, we hear repeated there, Word, Word. And some of you may know this passage and may know the Greek behind that, Logos, and the Greek word having many different uses. If you study it, that word is related to a number of concepts. The subject of the conversation, the shaping idea, the reasoning behind things, the message, the whole purpose of the conversation. And when we think about that in relating things back to the creation, those two go hand in hand. Because when we read in Genesis chapter 1, how does creation unfold? God speaks and then it happens. And so that logos, that defining foundational word, thought, intimately connected to creation. And we see that here in the first chapter of John. This chapter gives us a context that we don't see in any of the other Gospels. It's important to note where the Gospels begin. Mark begins with Jesus as an adult going to John the Baptist to be baptized. And then this time of the year, we're highly aware of where Matthew and Luke begin. Both of these tell the stories about Jesus' birth. Luke gives us a story of the shepherds and the birth from Mary's perspective. And then Matthew gives us the story of the Magi and the birth from Joseph's perspective. And all of these give us different insights into the incarnation. But John chapter 1 gives us this larger context, saying the Word became flesh. And this is the Word that was with God in the beginning. And that all that was created is connected to this Word. And then the interesting verses here. I always pause over these verses and think about them, because so many of us think if we were back there in the New Testament world, we would have immediately identified and understood who Jesus was. We would have known that he was the Word. We would have known that he was the Son of God. But what do these verses in John say? The light came into the world, And even though the world didn't exist without the Word, they couldn't recognize Him. They didn't know who He was. And so there, the mystery and the majesty of the Incarnation, we human beings in our limited capacity could not recognize Him. And the verses there say He even came to His own, the people of Israel, the ones that He had made covenant with, and they didn't recognize Him either. But those who eventually have an encounter with Him, those who push away all the illusions in this life and come to the reality of the creative Word, they then can become the children of God. And so there the fundamental purpose of the Word becoming flesh, the Word now becomes a bridge between humanity, fallen humanity, alienated, sinful humanity, and God. Those beautiful images that Lori shared with us in the children's sermon, the bridge that connects us. And if we think about things here, if you like drama, if you like these images, these metaphors, God has unfolded this drama of salvation history. Human history now is shaped by God's transformative act in sending His Son into the world. This is God's drama, and His Son has the title role. So many of us think about films, and if we like films, eventually we might have a favorite actor or actress, and we know that whenever movies come out, there are these top billings saying so-and-so in, whether in the old days it was John Wayne or Jimmy Stewart or Audrey Hepburn, or if you have some current actors or actresses that might fill these roles. We think about how they bring characteristic interpretations to characters, and we think so-and-so embodied Ebenezer Scrooge, or so-and-so gave this character a life that no one else possibly could. And so we think about Jesus stepping into the role of Messiah. There were expectations about what the Messiah was to be about, but Jesus defied those. And if you read through the Gospels, we constantly see this. People wrestling with, well, this is what the Messiah was supposed to be like, and now Jesus is doing something different, and we're not quite sure how we are to understand that. But as we read more, we realize we're constantly being pulled back to the larger context that this chapter unfolds. That Jesus is not just the Messiah for Israel. He is definitively the Messiah for Israel, but He is also the Messiah for all of humanity. And so we get one genealogy tracing back to Abraham, emphasizing that He's the Messiah for Israel. And then the genealogy in Luke tracing back to Adam and Eve and reminding us of the sins of all humanity. And that here the Messiah is the Messiah for us all. That is God's grace, God's love. We find, we experience in the Incarnation, the Word made flesh, living among us. How do we understand that, though, if we say that when we look at Jesus, we see God? We experience God in Jesus. Because we also have books in the Bible like the book of Job, where God is so far above and beyond us, so distant, that we cannot comprehend what God is doing. And at the very end, when God appears to Job, what does Job do? He says, "I close my mouth. And I repent in dust and ashes. I do not understand the majesty of God." And yet, in this, we realize the state we would be in without the incarnation. We would be cowering before God. And that transcendence and majesty and mystery would be everything. But now, because of the incarnation, we have a vision. We have an embodiment. We have a friend. We have someone to relate to. Years ago, I heard a sermon illustration that has its limitations, and I'll explain that in just a little bit. But we have a scene. Winter. Think about Friday of last week. Think about the mist everywhere. It's cold. There's ice on the ground. And the farmer goes out and he sees this flock of birds. Haven't quite gotten ahead of the migration season. And now they're shivering out there in the cold. But he's got this nice warm barn. And he's got the light on inside. And he's thinking, well, it'd be perfect if I could get those birds to go into the barn. But have you ever tried to herd a flock of birds? You can imagine the kind of scenario as he goes out there trying to shoo the birds, and they just go all sorts of different directions. And you know where this is going as a sermon illustration. Eventually he pauses and he thinks, well, if I could just become a bird and communicate with those birds and guide them into the barn, then I could save them. Of course, we like to think about this, and this illustration really is from a human point of view, a creature trying to help other creatures. But when we consider the mystery of the incarnation, God is the creator. God knows what is best for us. And God's not just experimenting with the incarnation, but God knows indeed what the incarnation is about. And this illustration just gives us more of a glimpse of the power of that incarnation. And we today, as Christians, as followers of Christ, reading these passages, meditating on the incarnation and the mystery of the Christmas season and the gift that has been given to us, praying and hoping that we're not squandering this gift, but trying our best to pay attention and to follow in the footsteps of Jesus and to realize that in Him we see God. That in the midst of this, we are trying to follow faithfully. We understand, as the book of Hebrews says, He is the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. That He has the title role and that we are to follow His example. And that in His actions, we find the love and the creativity of God. The Word was made flesh and made His home among us so that we could become children of God. That is the mystery that we celebrate this Christmas. We come now to our time of invitation and commitment. Hymn number 606, O Love That Will Not Let Me Go. Realize once again as we sing these words, as we celebrate Advent and Christmas this year, God has given us the greatest of gifts, and that when we look to Jesus, we see the face of God. Now also is a time for you, if you've never made a commitment to follow Christ, please take advantage of this opportunity. Walk forward so this church can pray for you and encourage you as you seek to be a disciple of Christ. Let's stand together and sing hymn number 606.